that's really where the entire rebooting ought to happen, which is really marketers, you know, kind of being more integral to the business and then looking at marketing as a subset of how they can do to enhance the entire offering. Away from just the creator of communication and consumer want to being an active catalyst in the entire business process.
Marketing is dead. Long live marketing. My name is Atul Nath, and you're listening to the Control Alt Delete Reboot Marketing Podcast, a toolkit podcast for anyone who is looking to connect with tomorrow's customers and build tomorrow's brands. Doing business today is like being tossed all around at the center of a tornado. To stay relevant in this manic world and be future forward, I personally believe we've got to hit reboot for marketing as a whole. Through this podcast series, I will be talking to some of the best marketing brains in India. Well, actually, they are some of the best marketing brains in the world. Over a period of time and over a period of multiple episodes, the idea is to develop a toolkit podcast for marketing and communication, a kit that resonates with tomorrow's customers and energizes tomorrow's brands. This is only the third episode of this podcast, so do go back and listen to earlier episodes. And also, don't forget to hit subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from, whichever podcast platform that may be. Today, I have someone with me who I'm happy to call one of my oldest friends from the marketing fraternity, someone I have learned a lot from over the years. I have Lloyd Mathias with me. Lloyd has over 2.5 decades of experience in marketing in India and in Asia. He was at Pepsi building brands for over a decade in the 90s and 2000s, and those were really heady years for the beverage business in India. Following his days at Pepsi, Lloyd has had great stints heading marketing for Motorola, Tata Teleservices, and HP in India and in Singapore. Lloyd is now actively angel investing and is a marketing and business strategist. He is a strong technology thought leader with expertise in transforming insights into action and is helping several marketing and startup teams to set them up for success. Thank you very much for being with us, Lloyd, and welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Atul. Great to be here.
You're pretty active on Twitter, I've seen, and you do tweet about all kinds of topics and all kinds of subjects. What does Twitter do for you?
So, two parts. I think, firstly, you know, Twitter for me is like the lazy man's blog, right? What you can say in, you know, 240 characters is better than, you know, spending an evening writing a long piece. So I think that's one part. Two, I think it's a nice, vibrant news source, keeping in touch with trends. So the reason I got into Twitter in 2008 was, you know, you were really conscious about this whole millennial generation and all the new tools they're using, which is why I consciously got into Twitter. But over time, I began to enjoy the program quite a bit. Of the recent past, I would say in the last 18 months, you know, since I've been off the corporate roles, the additional joy is that one can speak one's mind far more clearly and, you know, without being constrained by corporate communications. You know how it is in the last corporation, right? So, you know, a lot of my roles, you know, had PR reporting in and, you know, you'd stand in front of the media and virtually not be able to say anything. I think in Twitter now, you know, one can be far more free. And therefore, in the last 18 months, I've kind of let my comments move beyond, you know, what I would call areas of domain expertise. So talking about current issues, about even politics sometimes, what I always intend to do. But it's fun. It kind of, you know, it's very provocative. You know, you get the trolls after you. So quite enjoying it. I think it's a nice platform and, you know, and thoroughly enjoyable and a great way to share one's points of view.
Yeah. And sometimes it's just like throwing a comment into the wind and nobody may read it, but you've expressed it.
You absolutely. Know,
that's an interesting...
Great way to have your say.
Yeah, it's
actually, the other advantage also is sometimes you can reach out to folks you don't directly know. You know,
very
so,
true.
You know, very often you tag someone and oftentimes they respond and they find it relevant. I think brands are struggling to an extent with the change. So traditional business models are built with, you know, kind of the brand owner putting out a point of view, putting out a communication. And, you know, today the consumer is responding real time, right? He's walking into a store with a device, right? So he's making real price comparisons. I think a lot of brands are still struggling to keep pace with it. You know, I'd like to quote a famous example, you know, through the 90s and early 2000s when I worked with Pepsi. we gear our whole lives across maybe two or three mega campaigns, right? Megastars.
Right.
You know, you worked a concept, you researched it, you looked at a storyboard.
I've seen that firsthand.
You tweaked it around, and then finally you shot a commercial and, you know, waited for the response. And as I transited from Pepsi subsequently to Motorola, and I remember in HP, there was a time we were doing an average of about 70 to 80 pieces of communication a year, right? Wow. New products, new tweaks.
And so this was in the 2010s.
In the 2010s. So suddenly that radical change, right? So the luxury of, you know, studying a communication, testing it, researching it, you know, choosing between producer A and B was gone. It was all kind of real time. And, you know, it suddenly caught a lot of us, you know, almost unaware. And I would say that agencies to this date, mainline agencies, still struggle with that change, right? You know, one of my big pet peeves is that the creative prima donnas, you know, the Piyush Pandeys and the Prasoon Joshis and the Balkis, still thrive on the 60-second commercials. They make great ones.
Sure.
And then very often, you know, it's like given to the digital team and saying, hey, you know, guys, can you repurpose this into 5-10-second cutoffs and kind of make do?
Which often doesn't work.
Often doesn't work, right? So, you know, I'm kind of keenly awaiting, you know, kind of creative prima donnas grown out of the digital ecosystem, right? Guys who can really make kick-ass,
it's interesting,
cool creative that, you know, that's thought to digital first. And it's emerging. I think it's taking a little while, but I think it hasn't kept pace, whereas consumers have moved on. And I think one part of the whole challenge is really kind of businesses and marketers, you know, struggling to cede control. You know, I remember a classic, you know, little story when, you know, when I was at the Tatas, and, you know, telecom, it's always consumers saying that, hey, your connectivity sucks or whatever line drops. And this used to be the standard placeholder responses. And over time, we realized that we need to have someone, you know, at the desk 24/7, giving a real-time response, you know, about a real issue, and then feeding it to the technical team and saying, hey, go sort this issue out.
Right.
And the challenge always was, and I remember having this discussion with, you know, the CEO of the company, and he said, look, there's a kid out there who's empowered with the Tata Docomo Twitter handle and or else, who's speaking real-time to consumers. So he's representing the company, you know, and his last day at work, I mean, he could say things that make us uncomfortable, but it's something that, you know, we all learn to live with, right? So you run the risk of, you know, someone doing something outside the playbook. But I think, you know, you just have to accept it. This is real world. And I think consumers are beginning to see the fact that, you know, brands can't be all stiff in one-way communication. It has to be a two-way process.
Sure. And you see so much of that on Twitter these days that, you know, this is, I'm wondering also, Lloyd, is this an India problem? Or is it internationally that the brand owners of the world are struggling? Is this an India problem, or is this internationally brand owners are struggling with a similar situation?
I would sense it's an international problem. I don't see it to be India specific, but I see brands leveraging this differently. I think brands that are quick to catch on with current conversations, healthy repartee, I think they score well.
Yeah.
Whereas brands that typically have old world placeholder responses,
sure,
you know, consumers begin to see that as a bit of a challenge. So I see, the way I look at it is that, you know, brands that catch on to this, that work the repartee, that are quick to respond with consumers, really score well. Whereas ones which stay with old placeholder responses, they tend to lose favor with consumers. I mean, a classic example that, you know, I always found funny, I think, you know, but a couple of years back, you know, in Delhi, there was this classic issue where the chief minister was having it rough with the lieutenant governor,
right,
and there was these dharnas and such like. And I think someone, you know, inadvertently treated, you know, tagging the LG lieutenant governor. And in this entire process, you know, the LG service center kind of responded saying, you know, we will respond to your complaint shortly, right? So the tweet was to the effect that, you know, hey, government of India, change the LG in Delhi because he's giving the CM a tough time.
As in LG Electronics.
LG Electronics. And then LG Electronics on its Twitter handle said, yeah, we hear your complaint. A customer service rep will shortly be in touch with you, right? So kind of great mirth and great fun. Whereas on the other example, other hand, you have, you know, examples like I think what Zomato did recently, right? Getting back real time. So I think a lot of these are actually, you know, becoming mainstream. Who would have imagined that these actually were communication tools? In fact, I hear that Tesla, actually every one of Elon Musk's tweet, you know, is virtually their marketing campaigns. He makes all the big announcements. He makes all the big policies.
For better or for worse.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
The way you just talked about marketing as being the central hub of business, if I was to continue looking at marketing the same way, I would say marketing in many ways is still very much at the center of what happens in many businesses. Startups, I feel startup culture in many ways is actually marketing.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
But I do believe that marketing as it used to be in many ways, maybe core being marketing, communication or whatever, is kind of dead because
Absolutely.
There's so many different things going on. So if I was to say something as provocative to you that, you know, marketing is dead, long live marketing. And like I said in the beginning in my intro, that I believe that there is a reboot of marketing in that sense needed. How much would you agree with that? In what way would you disagree with that? What are your thoughts on that?
I think to an extent, marketing is certainly ripe for a reboot. And I think there are two aspects to it. I think one is, you know, you can't be a good, accomplished marketer without diving into the deep end of the business, right? So you have to understand, A, the purpose of the business, and B, the larger financial challenges, right? Businesses are successful so long as they're financially viable. And the reality is much more closer to the bone in the context of startups, right? They're all working with 9 months or 12 months of, you know, cash in the bank, or, you know, burn rate, as they call it, right? In that period, they have to succeed. They have to get new customers. They have to scale up. They have to hire people, right? So the person there is looking at more than just his product out. He's looking at business inwards. So I think until you get that dimension that marketing is not a cost center, it's not the money that you get handed over to go out and, you know, create, you know, consumer want. It's the fact that it's also the generator of money.
Got it.
Right?
Got
so
it,
I think until you get that 360 view, and I believe that a lot of marketeers, you know, are still in the old paradigm. For them, it's still about the budget you have and then how you expend it to get better benefit, as opposed to going out and saying, hey, this is what I think we need to do to get the business up and running. And maybe I'm going to take a cut back in my marketing spend now, but 6 months from now, or a couple of years from now, I'll go the big way. So I think that's really where the entire rebooting ought to happen. It is really marketers, you know, kind of being more integral to the business and then looking at marketing as a subset of how they can do to enhance the entire offering.
So that's what you would say is kind of a change in role that marketing people or marketing decision makers need to kind of focus on, shifting from what they were earlier to what they are.
Absolutely. Today. Away from just the creator of communication and consumer want, to being an active catalyst in the entire business process.
So I'd love to know a little more about, you know, what's worked internationally, how that kind of, you know, has enriched your own experience to be able to bring it to what you're doing now. Because obviously India has been a fairly peculiar and unique market compared to some of the international markets that you've kind of had a chance to learn about.
I think the big advantage of really kind of geographically extending one's role and moving to a new market is it kind of forces you to rethink, you know, your assumptions, right? India is diverse and, you know, we see, you know, every state has different markets. But let's say when I did this stint at HP in Singapore, you know, running the entire APAC market, right, from Australia, China, Japan.
Right.
I think one of the things I noticed was that the same stimulus, the same communication has different response mechanisms.
Okay.
You know, at one level. The second part is that the new team culture today is pretty much all pervasive. One of the very successful promotions we did at HP was really, you know, getting these bunch of 8 influencers from 8 different countries, you know, sending them on a 15-day vacation, all expenses paid to Japan, and asking them to create stuff around the HP PC, right? None of these were techies, right? One of them was an architect, the other was a photographer, the third was a fashion designer, the fourth was a musician, and they were different nationalities. And they were just young people who'd never met. They kind of got together in a room, spent a day together, then they were sent to different parts, with the only proviso being that they used the HP PC. Right. And some of the content they came up with was something that no ad agency would have provided, right? A lot of this went viral. And these were young people from different cultures, different experiences, you know, possibly different economic levels. So the ability to actually, you know, synthesize the fact that the new young culture today is so accepting of this global environment. And a lot of this communication ran seamlessly. So something that this Indonesian musician created as part of this process was the highest piece of content that HP used in Australia.
Wow.
Because people just loved the kind of the whole sound.
So
the
cross-culturally
music,
as well.
Just cross-cultural integration. So I think that was one remarkable. The other part is really in terms of, you know, just entire approach to work, right? So just people's you know, different cultures, but people's respect for time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I learned the hard way that you never schedule a meeting with your Aussie team, you know, post noon on a Friday. Right? It just won't work. So I think, you know, just this is the respect for time. In India, we kind of didn't take it so much for granted. Yeah.
So another area that I'd love to hear your view on, Lloyd, is the role of a typical marketing support agency.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you've had over the years the chance or the opportunity to work with some of the best agencies in India. How do you see the role of an agency today and moving forward as a support for marketing people? What can they do better? How can they kind of add more value to the process of brand building for marketers?
I think the role of the agencies that a marketer works with is absolutely central to his success. And, you know, I learned this on the job. This point was kind of driven home to me pretty well. So I had a great boss and a mentor in Vibha Rishi at Pepsi. And I think what he recognized soon enough is that, you know, while the power equation between client and agencies is skewed towards the client because, you know, he's hiring the agency and he's making the payment, I think a lot of how the agency works is really with that rapport and that chemistry that builds up over a client over a period of time. And, you know, for a second, if you just pull back and look at some of the best work happening in the country, right? Brands like Cadbury's, Fevicol, you know, I think a lot of these are really agency relationships that have nurtured over decades.
Right.
And I think the sooner the marketer realizes that an agency actually is the custodian of your brand as much as you are.
Mm-hmm.
And very often they have a longer history towards how the brand has evolved than, you know, the ephemeral nature of product managers and marketeers mm-hmm. moving in and out.
Mm-hmm.
I think the sooner you recognize. For that to happen, I think two parts. One is complete transparency. I think mm-hmm. really the agency has to be as cued in with your business objectives as you are. Two is I think the agency should have pretty much access to a lot of the data points, the consumer behavior, including your sales numbers that you have. And third is it has to have an understanding of a 2 to 3 year vision of where you want to take your company and your brand. So I think that's one aspect of it.
Yeah, well, those are really, really crucial points because, and I really like the second one about, you know, access to data because data and information, because that in the absence of that, the agency will typically always be second guessing, and you know
so that's I think one point, which is the second part is really empowering the agency, right? And I'm saying really the servicing team, because you have to recognize that the servicing team is actually kind of playing the tough job of, you know, managing, let's say, a not so pleasant client with massive creative egos at the back end, right? And that's a tough job. Also, given the fact that, you know, salaries across the communication space haven't kept pace to that extent, the quality of talent that's getting into agencies today is not
very,
as great as
true.
It was, let's
very
say, in the
true.
80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. So I think in that context, the sooner or the better you empower the servicing team, the more that you make them feel part of your marketing team, the more access you give them to your sales teams and to the other business teams, I think the better. So they have to get a sense that this brand is as much about them as about the client. And once they get that feeling that they're on the same side, we're winning together, I think then the level of work kind of jumps up a few levels.
But you know what's interesting, Lloyd, is but there is a counterpoint which mm-hmm. I often hear from clients
mm-hmm.
that the more agencies you have, the more ideas you can bring in,
mm-hmm.
right? Do you think that's
makes
so?
I'm
any
firmly
sense at
of the point of view that, you know, a strong, well-built relationship over time with greater empowerment, and now and then you kind of be making sure that the agency is in tune with the changing market scenario. But really, using agencies tactically, you know, having multiple rounds of pitches just to get in more ideas, I think is short term. And like I said, some of the finest brands that are built, you know, on great history of communication, actually have worked through this period by, you know, having long-term. So creating short-term tactical gains, doing multiple rounds of pitches, you know, getting more agencies so that they compete wildly for clients' business is a very, very short-term and tactical approach that may not have the gain in the long run.
In today's day and age, with the gig economy developing the way it is, any thoughts on how consumers as well as people working in the gig economy kind of impact work or marketing as a whole?
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm pretty fascinated by the gig economy. What I've read says that, you know, young people getting into the workforce today will typically have more than 25 to 30 jobs / gigs in their lifetime.
Wow.
And a lot of these would be fairly unrelated, right? So it could cater to your passion, right? So if travel's your passion, you're going to look at jobs that are going to take you to different places. You might switch from being, let's say a data analyst in the day to being a musician in the evening. 2 years later, you might take a break saying, okay, I'm past the musician phase. I'm going to stick with my data analytics, but I'm going to get deeper into, let's say, a new element, right? Performing arts or whatever. So I think one is the reality of the gig economy. What it really means in the context of business is that people are going to move more seamlessly between roles.
Right.
But on the other end for the company, I think you recognize that you might have a core team. A lot of work will have to be outsourced. So the more that you make your company relevant to the gig workers, mm-hmm. I think the better you have. So putting systems in place whereby you actually can get short-term jobs done far more effectively, sometimes possibly even more economically than having a full-time workforce.
Very much so.
But
yeah.
Not looking at it purely as an economic prism. So the one danger of the gig economy is companies looking at it saying, hey, I'm going to save on manpower costs. I think that's one part. But two is actually about getting specific expertise at a time and place you need it. And then, moving on to the next bit. So it really makes your company more nimble. And I think if large corporations have to enjoy the same innovation and nimbleness that startups do, I think they have to openly embrace the gig economy.
In your knowledge, is that something large corporations are doing in a big way, or they are slow to respond to that?
Extremely slow to respond. So two parts. I think one is because HR plays gatekeeper. So anything that goes out to outsource a job has to go to HR, and then suddenly companies realize they're not geared up for that. They don't have contracts in place. They're also needlessly paranoid sometimes about security. Data sharing. It's about security. Whereas just the kind of value that sometimes an outsider brings could be tremendous. Mm. And the other worry, of course, is the fact that in the gig economy, how does one verify that a person who claims to be able to perform something is really that, right? So that process has to be made more
Indeed.
Kind of rigorous
yeah.
to actually get the whole place. But I really think that willy-nilly, we are moving toward the gig economy. I sense over the next 10 years, most companies will have about 60% of the workforce, which will be on temporary gigs.
Wow, that's a big
Who won't be part of the mainstream. And companies just have to learn to embrace and live with that.
You know, it's interesting on the gig economy piece that I think we realized, and obviously the smaller the business, the faster this impact kind of hits you. And we realized that in our business that, there was a great benefit out of doing what you just kind of outlined. And there was a lot of resistance internally in terms of almost exactly all the issues that you talked about, in terms of data security and, reliability of people and so on and so forth. Necessity teaches you certain things. And that's what has happened over a period of time. Our industry has learned it the hard way that, this is the only way forward. And I think pretty much in the whole agency ecosystem, this is something that's happening pretty rapidly. Corporates are not quite as fast to respond.
And that's the end of part one of my conversation with Lloyd Mathias. In the second part of the conversation, Lloyd and I delve deeper into the marketing challenges faced by startups. Do listen in and subscribe to the Control-Alt-Delete Reboot Marketing podcast.